afternoon.
Good to see you.
Can we boast that I think this is the only panel that actually has, should I call it, refreshments at the door? I'm not sure where that came from, but thank you to the powers that be for that. Makes it kind of fun. So as people, more and more people are coming in, I'm really happy to see men in the audience. I'm always happy to see men in my audience. So thank you for being here. I promise you that you are not the subject of anything that will make you feel uncomfortable here. In fact, we love you and we need you, and that's what this panel is all about. I would love to invite my fellow panelists up on stage just to come have a seat up here while I do the intro. Come on up. I'll give formal introductions in a moment. Yeah, you can clap.
Thank you.
By the way, I am Robin Hauser, formerly known as Robin Hauser Reynolds. Has anyone had to change their name recently or wanted to? It's a little bit of a process. So anyway, I'm Robin Hauser, and I decided how am I going to do this? So I just sort of started making the Reynolds part like a little bit more faded and a little bit more faded, and that's what you can do when you're doing your signature on, you know, emails these days. So we'll see how that goes over. So we are talking about the benefits of gender partnership and the importance of it, and I'm really proud to be leading this panel because I think this is really the key to bringing women into upper management. Harvard Business Review, June of 2011, had something called the female factor. Are any of you familiar with the female factor? Basically states that if you take a team of men, regardless of their collective IQ, if you add one woman to that team, the collective IQ rises. And the more women you add, the higher the IQ of that team. I'm not making this up. It's science. Harvard Business Review, June 2011. You can look it up. It's because women have more EQ. So what's at the part of it? Catalyst also reports that companies with more women board directors experience higher financial performance. Companies with women and diversity in upper management produce products that serve a greater breadth of humanity. We all know about examples when that has not been the case. Do you know that the airbag was designed by a group of men, and they made the specs for the airbag to be pretty much the specs of the average of the men on the team. And when the first airbag came out, it actually injured and killed women and children because nobody stopped to think, wait a minute, a woman's frame is different, let alone we probably don't weigh as much as the average man does. So it really just shows that adding diversity to a team, whether it's gender diversity, socioeconomic diversity, racial diversity, sexual orientation, you name it, diversity is good and important for business. So what is a male ally? A male ally, in my opinion, is a man who will advocate for women even when there are no women in the room. How do we recruit male allies? What do we look for? I read an article recently, on the flight over here actually, that said that you have to look at what the genuine self-interest is of that particular man. So is it a man in upper management that has a daughter and therefore really cares about the advancement of women? Is it a man who has a working wife and he understands the complexities of that? Either way, it's definitely got to be a man that has empathy. Empathy for what it's like to be the minority, for how hard it is to break through ceilings, and a man that understands the value of adding a woman to the team. So for the first part of that, I think any man that's here, he's probably going to be a great male ally or wants to become one. Someone was mentioning to me earlier today that just walking, it was like, you know, feeling like a salmon walking, you know, swimming upstream because of the sea of women coming at him. And he really could appreciate what it's like for women in most cases, right? Women in financial, women in tech. We need to help men navigate this field. Talk about empathy. I have huge empathy for men who are trying to become advocates for women and who are afraid to open their mouth. We've seen at Grace Hopper what happens, like the 2014, the male ally panel, when some of our top leaders, people from Intuit, GoDaddy, people from Microsoft, really, really well-meaning, intelligent men, couldn't seem to say what they wanted to say in the right way without it being received the wrong way by women in the room. And so we need to help men understand how to articulate, how to speak about these issues. I think that's really important. We need to include men in women's groups. I've heard a lot of men say to me, yeah, but I can't go because that's femtech, or that's, you know, the women in tech group, or that's the women in finance group. How do I get involved in that? Why is it okay for women to have groups that don't include us if we can't have groups that don't include women? So think about that. It's not to say that it's wrong to have female groups, because I believe that especially younger women, any women, really minorities, all different women, need to feel safe. And if they need to be able to talk and have mentors and discuss their issues in the workplace amongst only women because that's where they feel safe, that's great. But when you identify male allies, invite them in, because that collaboration really helps. With that, just to sort of plant a seed for our discussion, I am going to introduce our panel. First, I'm very excited to have Carol Eckert on our team. Carol is Vice President of Military and Veteran Affairs with Comcast Corporation. In this role, she works on outreach to engage the military and veteran community. She served in the Army Reserve, and the National Guard, and was chief of the Women's Initiative Division and senior liaison to the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, where she developed a strategic panel for the empowerment of Iraqi women. Carol, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next to her, we have Dawn Zier. Dawn is president and chief executive officer of Nutrisystems, an innovative provider of weight loss program for women and men. Since taking the helm in late 2012, Zier has embarked on an ambitious turnaround and growth plan for the company, which has resulted in a doubling of profits and tripling of the stock price.
Wow.
Dawn, welcome. Ilya Bonick is senior partner and president of the talent business segment at Mercer, a global consulting firm. With more than 20 years' experience in HR consulting, Bonick has worked with many multinational companies to help them to make more informed decisions on strategic people issues. Ilya, thank you. And some of you might recognize Jerry Cuddy. Jerry is the president and CEO of Beneficial Bank here in Philadelphia. He is a banking veteran of over 30 years, and since joining Beneficial, he has led the company in its initial public offering and first major acquisition. He directs Beneficial's efforts to provide its customers with education and resource tools to help them to make good financial decisions. Thank you. So I'm also going to, is this working now? I'm also going to say that we will entertain questions on this panel, so when it's in about half an hour from now, I'll ask about, sort of get a sense of whether there are questions. And if you want to, not now, but in about 25, 30 minutes, you can come stand at any one of the microphones up here front, and then I'll know that there are questions. Carol, let's start with you. So you've served time in the Army. I think so much of recruiting allies and male allies is the ability for a woman to fit in, to sort of have this ability for us all to get along. And yet that's not always easy. If we don't play golf, if we don't drink, if we can't go to the 19th hole, how did you as a woman, with your extensive experience in the military, learn to fit in?
That's a very interesting question with a lot of complex components to it. One thing about in the military, it doesn't matter if you drink together, it matters if you can shoot and protect the people who are with you. So a camaraderie, military camaraderie, I can say is stronger than gender camaraderie, because we're looking in the military for people who can support us and who can do their job. So especially in combat. So in peacetime, when you have lots of a little bit more free time, perhaps you move into those types of biases. But in combat, I would say we're all looked at pretty equally because you have to take care of each other. Now, socially, a lot of our social activities are mandated. So through the command, so you will have social hour, you will have family activities, you will have command briefs that you all attend, and it's not a matter of inviting women and not inviting the men, it's which ranks go. And then your very precious personal time is often dedicated to your family because there isn't much time. So I think you're somewhat insulated and protected from that issue of going out to play golf and going out to drink because there just isn't time.
And when you first entered into the military, how important was it to you to have advocates, male advocates, or people that were willing to stand up for you or defend you when you were obviously one of the minority?
So that's very interesting. I've had a very long time in the military. I joined when I was 17, so I've gone from private to general. And when I joined, it was segregated, and it was the Women's Army Corps. Women were not integrated into the Army. It wasn't until several years later, and you can bet I was the first woman in just about all of the units I was in, because I was there when we began to integrate the Army, all the services. And then it got tough. Then it got tough. You definitely needed to know how to do your job. So I would say expertise is how you fit in. I never failed a PT physical fitness test in my life. You knew that you were being watched in everything you did. So you had to make sure you were really good at what you did.
That's fascinating. I have no doubt that you were.
Robin, can I make some comments?
Yes, please do.
On fitting in. I think it's obvious to say that we'll advantage ourselves if we fit in, but maybe it's important to think through why we want to fit in. And I think at least what I've learned is that fitting in means you're more familiar, which means you generate the confidence of leadership.
Yes.
So it puts you in a situation where the first assumption is that you can do the work, whereas if you don't fit in, then you've kind of got to prove yourself. One of the things that I've learned being just as a leader through making mistakes, if you like, is that the important thing is to get access. And I recall a lesson, if I can just share a lesson for
Please
me.
Do,
so,
yeah.
So in 2008, we were going through a restructure in our organization, and one of my operations leaders had female had said to me, Ilya, you don't listen to what I've got to say, yet the people around you who are mostly men in your leadership team, you do listen to. She goes, plus you don't spend enough time with me. And then it clicked. It's like she had a perception that I was not spending as much time with her as with others on the leadership team. So they were getting unfair access. I was getting more familiar with them. They felt they were getting advantage. So I think there's an approach to fitting in, but there's also a proactive approach that we can take to look to see if we can organize ourselves to get more equal and proactive time with our leaders. So my learning from them was I have the same amount of time with my leaders. I set up a calendar. I make sure that once every 2 weeks we've got an hour on, doesn't matter if they're male or female. And that helps get around that issue, I think, of fitting in.
Yeah, that. Sorry, go ahead, Don.
I think also fitting in with the familiarity. One of the things that I've read about and I've also seen within the company is sometimes it's not just sitting around the meeting room. It actually is those social events that many of us may or may not want to go to, but that's the opportunity where the true bonding happens. And as a woman, what I've learned is, you know, don't take myself so seriously. Have a little bit of a sense of humor. You know, not every comment is, you know, there's not a hidden agenda behind every single comment that's out there. Go with the flow. And I don't play golf, but I know a heck of a lot about sports. And it just is a great door opening for a conversation. And it's, again, a way to bridge a gap and have a little conversation. Now, a funny little story is one of my colleagues and very close friends, you know, she did not know anything at all about baseball. She decided she was going to a baseball game, a New York Yankees game, sorry guys, with a bunch of men from her department. So like all of us, what she do? She studied up and she made sure she knew every player, every stat, every single person about everyone on the team. And the big moment when, for those of you who know the Yankees, which may not be a lot of you, number 2 was coming up to bat, she said, "Yay, it's Derek Jeté." So like, just make sure, you know, if you're going to talk sports, don't do that.
You know, I think that it brings up an interesting point, though, because I will tell you that there are people in my generation that understand what that's like to fit in, to do whatever we're fitting in. You know, I lived in Europe, and I went to the car races with the guys when I was selling IPOs. However, I will tell you that there's a group, not just millennials, but I'm hearing it a lot with the millennial group, that are saying, hey, wait a minute, why do we have to conform? Why do we have to conform? And there's some resistance there, and so I just want to bring that up because I know that that's a difficult thing, and it's really about educating, you know, men as well about, you know, how do we bring them into our world as well. And Jerry, I wanted to ask you a question. Women often talk about not being felt like they're being heard in meetings, especially. They might give a suggestion, nobody hears it. Stephen gives the same suggestion 10 minutes later, people are like, dude, that's brilliant, run with it. So I'm curious as to how do you handle situations like that? You're CEO of a bank. When you're sensitive to the voices of women being heard or not being heard, how have you mitigated those situations?
I think it's and some of this sounds almost patronizing, but I'm the most protected class in the world, right? I'm a white male in my 50s, and I'm in banking. Which means, and the only minority distinction that I have is I don't golf and I don't drink. So, but think about that. I'm the most protected class that I could even imagine. So, when I started out in the very, very early 80s, there was not a lot of awareness of any of these issues. So, my training class in Philadelphia at a great bank was, you know, 22 men and one woman. And thankfully, she was a woman who turned out to be an incredible leader and that we all felt obliged to listen to. So I feel like we were at an early inflection point, but nothing along the lines of what's happening now. So I think we're small. You know, we're the oldest and largest bank headquartered in Philadelphia, but we're 800 employees. And I think one of the guiding principles of our company that has been pushed up and out by women who are leaders in our company, many of whom are in the room today, is the notion that they will be heard. So you can do everything you want with, you know, white men in their 50s to try to build awareness. And I think that has to be the foundational step, but that's got to be complemented by self-advocacy. So on our management team, I have a thing that I say to Joanne's here and Pam's here, tell me when I'm not listening, to your point. Mm-hmm. And I mean, really tell me. Tell me, you know, stop everything and say you're not hearing what I'm saying. And that's a conditioning thing that I started 2 or 3 years ago. And I don't think they feel the need to do that as much anymore as they did. And I don't know that it was even male versus female. It was more in the heat of the moment you tend to move. So stop me and make sure that I get your perspective before I make a decision.
I also think women are often, or young women in a meeting situation, often wait for that opening to happen. And a lot of times they don't get the chance because I'm sure all of you have been in meetings where, you know, somebody jumps in and somebody else jumps in and, you know, we're kind of taught to wait and be polite. And I think you just have to jump in and have the conversation and be assertive, you know, be polite about it. But I think a lot of us sometimes tend to sit back and wait for the opportunity and then the conversation has moved on. So it's, you know, as much as I think it's responsible for us as, you know, senior executives to make sure that the conversations are being had and heard, as I think younger women or women who feel like they're not being heard, it's just as much your responsibility to, you know, make sure, open your mouth and make sure you have that opportunity. Because nobody's going to go around a table of 20 and say, oh, Melissa, you haven't said anything. What are you thinking? So you do have to take proactivity on your own
and
shoulders.
And don't apologize for it, right?
Exactly.
Women tend to apologize. Mm-hmm. Think about this in like the next 24 hours, how many times you say sorry. You know, sorry, I have a question. Oh, wait, sorry, do you mind if I ask another question? I mean, we say sorry all the time. Men don't as often, but we shouldn't apologize if we have a question, right? Or if we have something that we want to say.
Robin, I'm sorry. I'd like to add something. She answered me.
Brilliant.
There, I read about a tactic that is being used in. Notice I interrupted you. And jumped right in.
Which is perfect.
Can you tell she's been in the Army?
A tactic is being used by the White House staff women, and perhaps you've read about it, where they have a deal that when they go into meetings, they will reinforce what the other person says, and these can be both male and female, so that they don't get passed over. So for instance, I come up with an idea, then Jerry would say, Carol, that's a very good point. Let's look at that a little. So you set that up ahead of time to give yourself validity. And I take issue with, they might not go around and say, let me hear from you. I think a good leader would do that and help bring everybody in, because we're all in competition and we need everybody's ideas. But the good leaders will, but the average leader would not.
Right, I agree.
And I was going to add that I think what we're describing is actually a leadership weakness. So as we think about engaging men more in diversity, we can look at this as a development opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a CEO, how would you look at that?
No, I agree with that, because I think there are these defining moments that you get up against. And because it's a good opportunity to humiliate one of my colleagues, I had this distinct memory of about 18 months ago at one of our board meetings, and Joanne was there, and in front of the board, not only disagreed with me, but it was somewhat critical in the way she disagreed with me, but very, very professional. And first of all, I mean, stunned that I was wrong about something, and I was. She took the right side of the issue. But the people that I made eye contact with were the three women who were on our board, who I think cared a lot about the issue, but they cared more about the fact that a woman spoke up about the issue and was comfortable enough in that environment to, you know, disagree with the CEO. So I think if you can build milestones of those moments, that's what shapes a culture. And it also, again, at some point, it doesn't become so much male, female, familiar, not familiar. It becomes about leadership. Mm-hmm. It becomes about actually exercising your prerogative and advocating for yourself.
And that's what you want, right? If you have diverse opinions, you're going to have differences of opinions. As a CEO, that's what you want. Mm-hmm. You don't want your whole team to come up to you with all the same ideas all the time, right? Present me several different opinions, and then let's come to a cohesive decision that hopefully is formed from a lot of perspectives.
Right.
Ilya, you started an initiative at Mercer called Men Matter. Do you want to share that with us a little bit?
Sure. The last 5 or 6 years at Mercer, we've been looking to make changes and address gender diversity, gender equity. And our focus has been, I think, as many organizations do, starting off by creating women's networks to educate each other, to provide mentors, to learn how to progress and so on. It's been very powerful. We've got, maybe 50 or 60 of these groups around the world in offices. But the extent to which it was having impact in terms of the rate of progression, particularly changing the mix of leadership between men and women as we move further up through the organisation, we were just not happy that we were moving the needle. And so I was asked, as one of the executive leaders, to co-sponsor our Women at Mercer initiative. And I struggled for 6 months, to be honest, trying to work out how I would make a difference. And then the obvious occurred, which is, well, I'm a man. Maybe I could focus on engaging our men. And so I started thinking about this. You know, we've got our executive leadership team is 50-50 male, female. But as we go through the organization, the mix is different. It's skewed more towards male. And if men are in more leadership positions, they're in the position to make decisions about promotion, about pay and the like. And so if we're going to make a big difference in gender diversity, we can't do it without engaging the men. At the same time, we'd embarked on a set of research, which we call When Women Thrive, where we looked at the pattern of attraction, promotion and retention of women in the marketplace. And so the core of our initiative was to do some internal research, we call it our internal labour map, to look at the statistics that we have across Mercer for the rates of attraction, promotion and retention of women through all parts of the organisation. Then what we did is decided to engage men. We would invite 120 of the most senior leaders in the organisation, excluding the CEO, because we didn't want this as a CEO initiative, bring them together in a series of town halls and start to engage them in a dialogue. And that dialogue started off around an objective piece of information, which is, this is the pattern in the market, this is the pattern in our organisation, and actually, it's not that different. How do you feel about that? And it was incredible, the discussion we had. We made the deliberate decision for engaging men for this first discussion because we wanted to have an open and honest dialogue, was not to invite women to that. And the comments that came through were just stunning. I mean, people were embarrassed, upset, couldn't believe that this was happening on their watch because they all thought they were fantastic, or we all thought we were fantastic leaders. And then we went to another level of discussion, which is to ask why. And we started to explore unconscious bias, which led to another set of discussions and quite a powerful meeting. And then from there, we set up, if you like, Men Matter kits for these 120 then to go out and roll the same program out in their area of responsibility. And when I say area of responsibility, some were managers, others were just influential individual contributors in the organization that we looked to engage. And it's had tremendous impact.
So I commend you for bringing those efforts. I'm sure it's not inexpensive to do that, and it takes a big commitment. So good on you. I think that it's hard to talk about gender equality if there's a gender wage gap. And Don, I'm going to ask you, as CEO of Nutrisystems, how have you handled the issue of wage gap, mm-hmm. gender wage gap? It's yeah. tricky, right? There are a lot of things that can attribute to it. I was speaking with Carol earlier. I know that the military doesn't have that as much because it's actually mandated by law. But we don't have that in corporate America, whether it's private or not, or public.
And I think what we also know is that, I think some stats are out there, that while women and men ask for promotions at the same rate, men get promoted more often. And I think we need to understand why. But if we just start at the very top, so only 5% of all Fortune 1000 CEOs are female. Only 20% of all board members are women. And in the Philly area, I'm leading the American Heart Association Go Red for Women initiative. And I thought, a good place to reach out is to go through the list of local CEOs, find the women. And I think I found six. And, you know, there's a lot of big companies in Philly. So it's a real issue. So I think part of the problem, you know, starts there. But then, in our company, I honestly try to be very gender neutral. So we do benchmarking every year of every position and see if it's at the right level compared to benchmark. And then we will compare positions that way and make adjustments. But I honestly don't look at it male, female, but if somebody is underpaid, you know, we want to make sure that we get them up to the right level. So I think that sort of happens as a result of actually being, you know, gender biased about it. And I would encourage women also, again, that, you know, sometimes you have to actually don't be passive about it. I think a lot of times men get ahead because they are more assertive and will ask, and if you hear no, they'll come back in 6 months and ask, and they may be very well qualified and deserving of moving up in the ranks, but an equally qualified female that does not ask, and this is not fair, but does not ask may more likely get passed over. So a lot of it is also about being assertive. So as part of my theme is, like, as women, we have to take on some responsibility. I don't think men get handed it to them either, but they might be much more aggressive, and that's not a bad word, about moving up the ranks.
Yeah, I mean, there actually have been studies that show that women don't ask for raises to the same extent that men do. They don't often feel as though they deserve the raise because we're harder on ourselves. Self-evaluations, women feel like, wow, I left at 4:30 to go to my daughter's ballet recital, therefore I probably shouldn't ask for a raise in my review tomorrow, which is, you know, really mm-hmm. unfortunate.
And so don't
think that way. Just if you know, be brave and ask for the raise, you do deserve it. There's an interesting study that was put out, I think also by Catalyst, where if there are 10 qualifications for a job, a woman feels like she needs to have 80 to 100% of those qualifications before she'll even apply. Whereas a man will have 60% and think he's got the job, no problem. So, I mean, this is not a diss, gentlemen. This is truly just a difference in the way we are in our behavior. I mean, there are obviously some very distinctive differences between men and women, But it takes confidence for women to know, okay, I should apply for this job, I should apply for this. But talking about male allies, it also, we need both our women mentors and our male mentors to encourage us to take that leap, to take that, to ask for that raise, to take that next, that promotion, that harder project. Carol, you were gonna say something.
Well, you just mentioned mentors, and women tend to seek out women mentors, and men tend to seek out male mentors. And one of the, there was a Harvard study that showed that when men have male mentors, they tend to get their salary increase about 10,000. A mentor can have that type of impact, whereas a woman's increase would be about 1,000. And you would ask, why is that? It's that the male mentors tend to be higher up in the company and have more influence. So it's not so much a gender, it's a position. And that the males were more likely to advocate for their mentees than the women were. And you would ask me about this, what does it mean to advocate? It means you knock on the door and go into the CEO and say, I have the ideal candidate for you, I'd like you to take a look. Or, and the women then have to be willing to knock on the door and say, would you go in and advocate for me and share my qualifications? And you have to be very direct. Although I would say, I'm very careful about this, is you can never mess up. If somebody advocates for you and you blow it, it's out there. You're not going to find anybody else to advocate. So you have to be really careful about asking for someone's support. This happened to me in 1990. I was pregnant with my last child, Desert Storm 1. You know, heading out across the desert to push Saddam Hussein out of Baghdad. Out of Kuwait. And I had a senior commander who told my commander that he had to take me out of command. I wasn't pregnant. My son was 6 months old, and that there's no way I would go and deploy if needed when I had a child. And this man said, I won't take her out of command. She's the best commander we have. She's ideal for the position. Now, can you imagine? My career would have been totally different had not he gone in and said that. But that took guts on his part. So you're talking about a colonel talking to a two-star general to say, I want to keep the major.
Well, and the fact that they didn't even ask you. Why didn't they just ask you? Hello? Right?
I don't think it was me. It was a gender. It wasn't me. It was, we don't want a woman going off to combat, especially one who just had a baby.
Yeah.
It is one of the realities, though. We make assumptions on behalf of other people for best intentions. It's just what we do. I think that takes us down the path of unconscious bias.
It's very much unconscious bias. Exactly. Jerry, as CEO of a company, what do you think is the biggest obstacle to gender equality in the workplace?
I think it's a combination of the things we've been talking about. So I like to talk about awareness a lot. Mm-hmm. And I really related to what you said in your introductory remarks. I came to my awareness about a lot of these issues when I was younger in my career, principally because my wife was in the auto industry, which is a very male-dominated industry. So I watched what she went through, and I think that really heightened my antenna and my sensitivity. So I think anything that we can do inside, and it's, again, not that it's a luxury, but when you've got 800 people as opposed to 80,000 people, you can communicate out by example a lot more readily in a small organization. So I think it's about making sure that people are aware. I think it's definitely about changing our practices in terms of who we hire and what positions we hire them for. I'm really sensitive to something Carol said about, particularly in financial services, promotions tend to go to men disproportionately. And it's not just because there are more men in the industry. I've been the beneficiary of that, but I've also made sure that as I've moved up to make sure that I was balanced. So I think that not just our hiring practices, but also our promotion practices. And then really emphasize self-advocacy. I think that's really, really critical. And it shouldn't even be incumbent upon a woman to be more of a self-advocate for herself than her male counterpart. But I think we're in that generation where people are comfortable with that and understand that's an unnecessary. It's an unfair burden, but it's a burden that has to be delivered on anyway.
There's something to think about when promotions are linked to self-evaluations. So how many of you are managers in the room? Okay, so remember when it got kind of trendy to have every one of your employees self-evaluate? Well, that's actually, you're inviting bias into that, because a woman is not going to evaluate herself with as much confidence as a man is. Okay, I mean, I almost said Trump, and I'm not going to do it. But but think about that. So a man is likely to say, I deserve this promotion, I can do this job, I'm going to do an incredible job for you. And the woman might be like, yikes, yeah, I think I could do it. I'm pretty sure I can do it. I probably, you know, could have been a little bit better on my last project. I see now how I could have been more efficient with this. Right? That's just the way we are. And I'm telling you that that is then. So think about doing away with self-evaluations, because the manager that's reading those is already going to be biased. You can't help it. A woman or a man that reads these self-evaluations already thinks, wow, gee, you know, Susie kind of thinks she could have done a better job here. She's a little wishy-washy about her performance. I kind of thought she was killing it, but now I'm realizing that she's a little wishy-washy. Steve, I kind of thought he was, you know, I don't know, by the water cooler a lot, but he seems to think he can take on the CEO, you know, position. And so my opinion as manager is swayed by that. You can't help it. We can't help our biases in a lot of ways, right? You can't strip the bias out of a human being, so you have to change the structure. And that's, something to think about. Let's get a sense of questions. How many people have questions? All right, well, let's start addressing some questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hi. So today I've heard a couple times about having a male ally that has a daughter, a wife, he'll have empathy. I've got a lot of male bosses who have daughters, wives. They just don't have empathy. Now I can try and convince them to do something different. So I don't think having a daughter and a wife creates empathy in all individuals. So I'd like to hear how and what creates a good ally other than having a daughter and a wife.
A working wife, I said. A working wife.
A working wife.
But still,
and I do mean that every male boss that I have had has a strong working wife.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
So I happen to have, if I look at my career, there are three mentors that I've had that have been extremely influential to me, and they've all been men. And I think the number one thing you can do is be great, get noticed. And I also think that these systems where you assign a mentor to somebody generally doesn't work, because a mentor-mentee experience is very personal. And it has to be built on trust. And that doesn't happen. It's not, oh, presto, and you have a mentor. Often it comes from doing a great job at a meeting, and you notice that I might notice, or a guy might notice, that you did a great job, and he gives you a compliment. Okay, you know, that was a great presentation. You had all your facts. Or something like that. And that's an opening. But I don't think, you know, I think then you have to then take the opportunity and say, oh, thanks, and then try to ask a question. You can't say, oh, will you be my mentor? You know, that's not really how it works. I think you say, oh, that's great. Can we grab a cup of coffee? Could I ask you a question? And then build, and then you have to see if there is that connection. But I know that, again, I don't think I ever had a formal mentor that actually worked out. It's always been the ones that, you know, took me aside. And the lessons I learned, which I think are very important for women, because again, it's things we don't necessarily do, is if you look at who is more or less risk averse, it's often men are more willing to take chances and take risks. And one of my mentors said, you know, don't be afraid of change, embrace change. And I think that's important. Don't be afraid to take the risks, because a lot of times those opportunities come with a certain degree of risk, and often we choose to sit that out. You know, there's a couple, but I mean, that just things like that will really help you. And don't be afraid to advocate for yourself, because I would say one of the strongest mentors, what he kept telling me is, told me when I was making all my mistakes. So if you want a mentor-mentee relationship, you have to be open to feedback. And I think as women, we actually stand to gain there over men, because we tend to want and accept feedback very readily. So, but you have to be willing to hear it. And then another one of my mentors just kept telling me, ask for what you're worth, ask for what you're worth. And I would often say, hey, well, it sounds a little greedy. And he's like, stop it. No guy would ever say that.
So. Could I add something there?
Yeah.
Studies have shown that if you tell stories, mm-hmm. That will increase empathy. So in other words, to that boss that won't listen to you, tell some stories that you've seen. Maybe don't even make it personal. Well, this happened to my sister, where she was, you know, where total discrimination. So as you just used in your example, mm-hmm. you weren't aware.
No.
All the men in that room weren't aware.
Exactly.
So stories that increase awareness, I think, can promote empathy. So use stories to tell your story without it being your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my comment about men with daughters, where I've noticed that most is in tech. I was in front of a large audience and at a tech industry, so it was 99% men. And I asked him how many had daughters. And I asked him how many of them would be happy if their daughters were in their workplace, in the workplace culture as is right now. Two raised their hand out of 300.
Wow.
So those are the men that start caring, right? They care. They know. As their daughters get older, they're like, whoa, I don't want them in this environment. And I think that probably, you know, tech has its own issues, but that's where that comment stemmed from. Yep, question.
I think she was actually in line
before. Oh, okay.
Me.
Go ahead.
My question is actually about the flip side of this and a situation that perhaps has grown because of a history of inequality, which is for women who are in manager positions that had to fight in order to get there. I've found in my experience and talking to other people that sometimes they either have the attitude that you should be grateful to be in this position and so don't push too hard to get what beyond what you already have, or to say, to look at female employees with a harsher perspective and say, you need to rise above what you're doing because you're a woman, because I had to do that. And so even if you're performing at the same level as a man, they may view you as less accomplished. So how do we get women in those positions to be our allies as well?
I think that's a really, really good point. I think part of the problem with, I'm hopeful that millennials are more supportive of each other, you know, women, when we're supporting women. And I get in trouble every time I say that I think that my generation, that women aren't or weren't as supportive of each other. I think that we can be. The problem is when there's only one woman, if any, in the boardroom, and when it gets narrower and narrower up in the C-suite, you're almost pitted against each other without even knowing it, right? Because you know that only one of the five of you is going to get there, and so it's hard. But I think that we only stand to gain from supporting other women, mm-hmm. always. You know, reach down, pull up. There are a few women in high executive positions that I've spoken to recently that told me that it wasn't that they didn't mean to be mentors. It's not that they didn't want to be supportive of their co-workers or subordinates. It's that they literally feel like they have to work three times as hard to maintain their position and their respect in the company that they forget to look up from their laptops, right? To look around them and just say, oh my gosh, you know, I should be out there being a mentor and helping. So it's tough. It's tough for women in those positions. But think about it. Think about what we can do to support the women that are coming in, you know, since you've been there. Anybody else have a comment on that? Okay. I promise I'll get you next.
Thank you. It's really refreshing to hear men's perspective as well. And then just to add on, you know, the men matter point, it's not for the workplace. It's a little off topic. So I have a 5-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son. And what I see is none of the elementary school education or the childcare facilities, no one has a male presence. And I do see that my daughter, she's not exposed to any males in her primary education. My son is not exposed to any males in his primary education. So as an example, I mean, you know, the nurturing qualities of a girl transforming to a male, you know, to a boy. But then at the same time, I see good qualities in my boy that could be helpful for my daughter to actually eventually grow up into a successful leader. But there is no that kind of informal observational, you know, chances for them in their early education. So as a culture and a society, how can we incorporate that? And what are your thoughts on this? You know, I mean, I did not go to education in this environment. So I believe it's only in middle school and high school is where you have male teachers. That's what I keep hearing. So
yep.
I don't know how we can encourage. I'm fortunate to have both boy and girl, so it's like I can see the positives that they both bring to the table, and then getting that cross for them, you know?
I just want to say I think that's a really interesting point. I'm making a new film right now about unconscious bias, And I was thinking about, okay, well, where are women biased? Where do we see this most often? And I was talking to a friend of mine that said, the first day, and I live in San Francisco, and so it's a little progressive. And this woman said that she was handing her son off to a nursery school, and it was a young man with a goatee that came out to take him. He was the daycare provider at this. Actually, it was kindergarten. So he was the kindergarten teacher, and she was completely, she almost didn't let go. And she said it was just so out of this sort of grandmotherly kindergarten type teacher thing that she had. And yet when you think about the benefits that our kids could have from having male teachers and female teachers, male leaders, female teachers, so I think that's really interesting.
I think you have to go out and seek them yourselves. If they're not in society, you need to find outlets that can do that. I can recommend a book, Real Boys, Raising Real Boys. Mm-hmm. It helps you with a lot of those issues. You have the same issue in the suburbs with diversity of race and diversity of thought. And as a parent, you just have to go find those opportunities and wait for society to catch up.
I think I think it was like Hemingway. Somebody asked him about his childhood heroes, and he said he didn't have any, so he made them up. I think it's really critical.
Books.
To read biographies, particularly to boys, about men who were in leadership positions, in equal balance to reading them biographies about women who were in leadership positions also. I think that somewhat fills the void, particularly during primary years as opposed to secondary years where you probably encounter more male teachers.
And I'll say maybe something a little counterintuitive, but I think as businesses and society, as the world of work changes, we're focused very much, I think, on ensuring that people are developing the skills to take them to the next kind of work opportunity. And I think a lot of that is women ensuring that they're equipped to move from skills that are probably going to be displaced or jobs that are going to be displaced and move into other that are currently maybe more traditional male domains. We also need to be looking at encouraging men to go the other way. So it shouldn't be male jobs and female jobs, but reality is I think many of us think that way as well.
I think that's an excellent point. And until it becomes sort of society's norm to have the father be the primary caregiver, for example, right? But we have a big stigma in our society about that. I think it's getting better, but I know that my parents, if you know, had I married somebody that wasn't working and I was the primary breadwinner, my parents would have been completely judgmental.
Yeah. Well, in some societies, yeah, but...
Just saying.
I spent 9 years in Europe. If you look at the Nordic model, I mean, that's one that has incredible diversity. I don't think has these issues so much.
Yeah. Exactly. Question here.
Hi, I'm Lexi. Nice to meet you, everybody. So something that I've heard not only in here, but in some of the other aspects of the conference today is the gender wage gap. You know, women make 80 cents to every dollar a man makes. But I think one issue that...
70.
So, somebody else said 80. It's somewhere between 70 and 80 to every dollar a man makes. But I think one thing that we neglect to talk about is other women. I think that is particular to white women. I think that we're forgetting black women, Muslim women, trans women. And even now, I'm looking at a presumably all-white panel. And so we're talking about trying to get women at the table into supervisory roles, into CEO roles. And it's already challenging for a woman. But how do we make that space for Latinas, for Muslim women, for everybody who is not white?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I
agree with you. I agree with you 100%, and I will tell you that I believe this is the United States for certain, California, that there's over 55% of the young girls in California right now are Latina, and so it's an incredibly important issue to bring diversity into the workplace in order to make room for them, and so I couldn't agree more with you. I was not in control of the panel, although I'm thrilled with my panelists, but I would have liked to. But I think that's a really valid
that's a good
point. Of course. Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, the only way to bring more diversity into a company is to have more diversity in upper management. Whether it's gender diversity or people of color or sexual orientation, it's the only way to do it is talking about empathy is when you have people in leadership roles, management positions that are of that awareness and are people of color or women. So I agree with you. Does anybody else have a good example?
Yeah, I think it's incumbent upon us. I think you need to hold us accountable. So we have shareholders and we have customers. And I would expect that over time, particularly with this generation, they'll be voting with their business and they'll be voting their shares accordingly based on our behavior. So, and I think people generally give you credit for making progress, but listen, I work for the financial services industry, which is we're not the most progressive bunch, and I get that. But I think people will give you credit for point to point, not for the effort, but if you can demonstrate actual progress.
Diversity Inc. is a magazine that rates organizations by their sense of diversity and their actual metrics of performance. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for those organizations that will welcome people of color and inclusion, so rather than diversity means let's bring in all different types. Inclusion means let's make sure we're embedded in the organization and in appropriate roles. So I would recommend you take a look at Diversity Inc. and their ratings. And I can add that Comcast is on there.
We'll go to the middle and then we'll go over to you.
Hi, so I've heard this theme throughout, not just this conference, but a lot of other places where it says, so know your worth and ask for what you're worth. But I feel like worth is such like a hush-hush topic that until Glassdoor.com showed up, I never really knew what my worth was. So my first job trying to negotiate to a value that I had no clue what that value could be. And so I'm an engineer by training, and I was going into a construction management firm where, one, I was one of the minority for a couple of reasons, and two, I had no true resource to tell me what I was worth. So what are these resources? I mean, because I feel like even when I ask other women in the field, they don't necessarily share that data, and it's not public because it's private firms. So I don't know, how do you know what you're worth?
I want to tell you, I think this is absolutely brilliant. I'm going to let you go, Don, one second. I recently read an article, I think actually it was a TED Talk or TEDx, where a gentleman is an advocate for David Marcus or something like that, who basically said we should have open, it should be completely transparent and open how much everybody makes. And think about that, because think about how often we sit here and we wonder, well, even if you're just graduated from college and you're sitting at your as an associate or something and you're thinking, well, did he get paid more than I did? Did she get paid more than I did? And you waste so much time and energy worrying about that. And the idea of putting it out there so that everybody knows what everybody makes, and then you just get down and do your job. So it either inspires you to move up to that next level because you know what the person above you is making, but it also makes a company accountable for not having huge wage gaps, which is really fascinating. But you, Don?
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because one of the things that I've noticed, which was, again, not from my generation, but as I look at the younger generation, is they do often share this information with each other. And I think that was kind of forbidden, right?
Yeah,
we never talked about it. So I think a lot of the 20, 30-year-olds are having these conversations with each other, which is good. The other thing, though, is I think in the real world, sometimes, a lot of it's performance-based, too. So, again, it's that same message, do a great job. Like, we I think, have comparable salaries for the same level of work, but then I will differentiate the heck with bonuses and things like that for my top performers and the people who aren't performing. And this is just based on are you doing a good job or not. It doesn't take gender or race or anything like that into account. But I think there's a lot of vehicles out there where you can get a benchmark. So, early on in the career, as an engineer, go back to the college and say, okay, they always have the stats on what's the entry-level positions for these jobs. You can go online just like you can find the top 100 best schools or the 100 best value for money. What are the 100 best companies to work for? What are the companies what does an engineer make? I mean, a lot of this information, while aggregated data, is available online to give you give you some sort of benchmark. And I also think that you can go to your HR department and say, what is the range for a job like mine and what I can expect? And it doesn't have to be personal about you. It's just, what does this job provide, and do you have a benchmark? Because I know at our company, you know, we rigorously benchmark every position. So I think the data is out there. It may take a little bit of digging.
Okay, so we have, I hate this part of the panel because we have like 5 minutes left and 6 questions.
I'm going to recommend one book, Know Your Value.
Know Your Value. Good book. So we're going to, you've been very patient. We're going to get this question. And then I'm just going to also tell you that I'm hoping that the panelists will stay for at least maybe 10 minutes. And
sure.
So that you can.
Is the wine?
Come on. If the wine's there, bring us wine and we'll stay to answer questions. Go ahead. You have a question.
Hi. Mine's a little similar to a previous question. But when you all were talking about sometimes it's difficult for a woman to speak up in a meeting because everyone, she's kind of waiting for her turn. It made me think of a time that I did speak up in a meeting, and it was, my team is comprised of all women, including management. I spoke up about some topic we were discussing, and I thought that my point was heard. A couple days later, I got called into my manager's office, and she told me that we don't really do that here, and if even like up the higher management than her, if someone else was in that room, they would have pulled her aside after the meeting and said, who does she think she is?
Really?
You know what?
And that was such a big
deal. Do you still work at that
company? Yeah. Leave!
I do.
You do? Well, you're working for idiots.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're working for idiots. Yeah. You should leave your company and have them call me. I'll tell them they're idiots.
Yeah. No, honestly. You cannot believe the number of young women that stay in companies after they've been sexually harassed, after they've had comments like that, after they've, don't put up with it. Look at Glassdoor, what you mentioned, it's a brilliant company. Look online at Glassdoor, find out companies, there are safe companies out there, I promise you, okay? Don't put up with that.
Although it could just be the one manager, not the company.
It could be that manager.
It could be, yeah.
It's a good company.
You've really got to speak up. You have an obligation now.
Yeah.
You really have to speak your mind.
Be the squeaky wheel.
Thank you.
Do we have time for one more question? Is anybody in here from the... Oh, good. We're on our own. Nobody's watching us. Okay. Sorry. It was down here. Sorry.
I actually have two pieces of feedback, because you said you enjoy that, and one quick question. The second feedback just came from that question, but something that I... Right in the beginning of the panelists, a lot of... I think subliminal bias is by saying fit in, and you did address it a little bit, but I think the fact that you're saying fit in, or a woman needs to fit in, you need to fit into the table, you need to seat at the table. No, no, no. A man needs to learn to fit in with us as much as we fit with them. Fit in needs to come out of our conversation, because that's the conversation is where we're losing the younger kids, and they're not hearing it. Because if you tell a younger kid, well, you just gotta, you know, you gotta go fit in, she means, go act like a man. And that's not fitting in, and that's not inclusion. So I just want to caution you on those words, because you're all top leaders, and you've all used those words, and it scared me.
Yeah,
and it infuriated
me, to
be honest.
Just a comment.
So the second comment, I just want to caution again, as a CEO of a bank, it is not so easy for that young lady to just quit her job.
No, I didn't ask her to.
Well, you said you should leave that company.
Well, I think
it's not that simple.
I'm just saying,
you made it very like casual, like, well, you shouldn't work there anymore. Yeah. Well, you know what? We've all had bad bosses, and you can't just leave. We have families, we have obligations, we have college loans, we have lives, and we don't work. We're not a CEO of a bank to just quit our job.
Sorry, Jerry, that was me. I said it.
So the other, my question would be, for the women on the panel, if you're sitting in the room, do you have bias against, do you... When you're having opinions, do you look at the men as being more intelligent, or do you notice that about yourself? And I don't mean it like you're doing it automatically, but like, do you realize that you're always going to like a male counterpart versus a female? I'm just curious of your...
I would say no. I think that my position around the table is gender neutral, and I'm looking for the best ideas from the best person, and for somebody that's going to be collaborative and help get the job done. And I think that's really important. But No, I definitely don't think men are smarter or not less smart. I think, you know, everybody has their opportunity. There are smarter men than certain women, and there are smarter women than certain men.
Right.
And I just look for the best opinion around the table.
Yeah, I just
and building
awareness
on
of it, like just and not about the Black Lives Matter, but the awareness of that there is an issue and that, hey, let me be accountable as a woman leader.
Right.
Am I doing this? That right. may be more of the conversation as well. Sorry if I felt like I was abrupt.
No,
or
thank
fresh,
you so much. Your point is very well taken.
Don't say sorry.
Don't apologize.
Now you're discounting yourself.
Okay, I have to say, it is 4 o'clock. So I just want to tell you that if you have another event to go to, you can leave. And as long as nobody kicks us off stage, we will stay for a little bit. So. Thank you. Go ahead, you can ask questions.
Do I need the mic?
Yeah.
You can come up
yeah,
here
do.
If you want.
Well, the people staying there will
All
want
right,
to hear.
Go ahead.
All right. So we talked about women's groups, and I actually work for Mercer, so I'm really familiar with our, you know, Men Matter, and our women's group is actually called Women at Mercer. How do we, especially when we're focusing on the younger generation, and maybe this doesn't even apply to, you know, maybe it applies to everyone, not just the younger generation, how do we make men feel more comfortable when we're talking about these issues not on such a formal platform, right? So the day-to-day, just, you know, in business or even socially, how do we make men who happen to be working in the same area as women, how do we make them feel comfortable when talking about these issues without feeling like outcasts or feeling like they're one out of 25 or something like that?
I'll go back to stories. I think helping men just hear your story then is not pointed at them. You're sharing a family story, you're sharing an example of discrimination, and then they're free to relate without having to relate directly with you.
But then how do you make them, we talked about these allies, right? And I say make them, but I have 3 brothers, right? And I know that they would advocate for me, but I think in some situations, men just don't feel comfortable to speak up. So yeah, maybe they understand right. your story and they're empathetic, but how do you empower them to feel like they can do something, they can speak up?
We need to find role models for them
right. men who
to
can.
Show how it's done. And where we can't find role models and show how it's done, then find an opportunity for training and development to show how it's done. And I think a lot of that comes through leadership development programs from the start of your career and working through. These are some of the issues that you need to work on, some of the capabilities you need to develop to be a very effective leader.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question. Sorry, right over here.
Hi, I have a similar question. So I'm still a student, and given the election and everything, sexism has come up in like my friend groups, and it's hard sometimes. I know we try to tell stories, but I had some male friends who kind of felt attacked when we expressed sexism that we felt, and when we gave them actual examples, they tried to like they kind of invalidated them. So just, you know, we try to be gentle with it, but I don't always feel like I have to be gentle. They should kind of. If they haven't had those experiences, we felt invalidated. We didn't know how to approach them and give them, you know, without making them feel as if they've been sexist, because sometimes I think they just think, you know, they're afraid to admit
yeah,
it.
Tell them to get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
no, but I mean, it's a really interesting point, because I think what happens is I think that comes from an insecurity. I think that comes from a fear of, oh my gosh, do I do that too? Did I do that? And so they're like, nah. I mean, it's like listening to somebody say, well, I'm not racist, I'm not biased. I mean, you know, we all try not to be, but of course we are.
But that's part of that's part of the dialogue, right? That's part of raising awareness,
right.
And it's not always comfortable.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it takes time and kind of understanding and patience.
And help them. Go about a different way. Try to get them to empathize by somehow being in your shoes.
Okay, thank you, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Hi.
So going into a different direction, my question is for all of you about pull-through. So what I see in my organization, and I'd like to see from the varying organizations that we have, that you are, what you might be seeing or how you are actively trying to remedy it. So we have an organization where we're bringing in 60% women versus, you know, it's not even 50-50, it's the majority of women at entry level. As they go up and they work their way up to upper management, it's a pretty good statistic still. It's still around 50-50. And then it's almost as if, I'd like to say glass ceiling, but it really, it doesn't feel that way, that that step into executive management, it's a huge drop off. I mean, it is a statistically crazy drop off. Mm-hmm. And when people in upper management are asked, or women in upper management are asked, they don't believe it's a glass ceiling, that they're experiencing a glass ceiling. They don't believe that we have one. So what do you think the, you know, I'd like to see what you see in your organizations and what you think that might be.
You mentioned a pool. Do you actually have the reports? We call them funnel reports. Do you have the reports? Well, you put the numbers forward. It doesn't matter if they think there is one or not. The numbers speak for themselves.
No, it's the women that are waiting for the next step. They're the ones that don't believe that there's a glass ceiling, not the executives. The executives know that there's action that needs to be taken. It just, the actions that are being taken just aren't really working. We're not working fast enough. Mm-hmm. So
I think we need to be better at actually digging in and diagnosing the issue. So taking a look at the data and see what the problem is. Yeah. So are we losing women at that level? Are women being directed into key positions that give them the skills required for promotion? You might find the issue is more complicated than an unconscious bias in selection, but somehow we haven't managed careers and volumes, if you like, scientifically enough to be able to get sufficient women in position to be promoted.
I have to officially shut down the panel. I'm so sorry, but some of us, I actually have to catch a plane back to California, but we can also, and I got a little bit of a notice back there. But if you're happy to stick around a little bit, thank you for coming. Really appreciate your being here. Thank you for great. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your questions.